This edition of the program, thank you very much for tuning in. I have to tell you, with one small exception, off the menu for tonight is any further discussion about what happened Friday in Aurora, Colorado. I just can't deal with it. That's the main reason. And talking about it is not going to bring about what is necessary, and that is reasonable, rational gun laws in this country. So, with no disrespect intended to any of the victims, including the family of the young guy accused of committing the crime, with all due respect to everybody, I'm going to bow out of that discussion. Got an email from Scott in Arkansas last week. I made a point about referring to the South as, you know, that region of the country that is pretty much the most effed up. more murders, more rapes, more incest, more Bible thumpers. The South sucks in more money from the federal government than it pays out in taxes. And, you know, it's just kind of a, it's kind of a place that defines itself by its hypocrisy. That's all I'm trying to say with that. And, you know, I've had a lot of people say, well, you know, you live in the middle of it. You live in the buckle of the Bible Belt. If you feel that way, why don't you bail out? And, you know, that's a good point. But I, you know, all I'm doing when I talk about this stuff is quoting what I think are valid, legitimate statistics. I have scores of good friends in the South. Some of them are just redneck as hell. They're not politically redneck, but, you know, everybody from people who like to drive 26-year-old pickup trucks to people who, are on the opposite end of the spectrum. And it's not that I don't like the people that I know here. The people that I don't like are obviously people I don't make any effort to associate with or even get to know. So while it might sound a little bit schizophrenic, well, if you've lived there for over 40 years, what the hell are you doing busting up on the South? Well, I guess you'd have to know me to know the answer to that. But anyway, I get this from Scott in Arkansas, and I thought I would share with you. He says, "Hey, Mike, I'm a regular truth-seeking listener, podcaster, and overall fan of the Malloy Show. Last night, I guess it would be Friday night, you received a call from a self-described Yankee boy. I believe he was in Pennsylvania. And in the course of your conversation on the Aurora tragedy with Yankee Doodle, he placed the blame for acts like this on the South. You seem to agree wholeheartedly with this jerk, beside the fact that you live in the South, married a beautiful Southern gal, and are raising an awesome daughter there as well. I wish you would expound a bit tonight. I don't get it, and think you are wrong on this. I Googled violence in America by region and found little to change my thoughts, as the South has no monopoly in this area. In a recent article from Forbes magazine listing the top 10 most violent cities, Detroit, Michigan came in first, along with several other cities from the north, as well as west, east, and yes, south. You'll be happy to know Hotlanta wasn't even mentioned. Sorry you feel this disgust with your family's home. Signed, Scott in Arkansas, a liberal, peace-loving Southern boy. Well, I don't feel disgust with my family's home. I really don't. And I've had four children born in the South. You know, whether I ever want to change that or not, they're Southerners by birth. I hope they're cosmopolitan or non-regional by their upbringing. But Scott, in the first place, I don't know that the guy that called in from Pennsylvania placed the blame for this craziness that occurred in Colorado on the South in general. I don't think he did. Maybe he did. If he would have been specific and I would have caught it, I would have told him no. That's not fair to do that. I'm talking about overall immoral acts, violence. It is more prevalent in the South. Even though the Klan was put together in Indiana, it was in the South that all this horrific violence, the lynching, dragging people behind pickup trucks, burning people out of their homes. I mean, that didn't occur in Detroit. It didn't occur in Brooklyn. It didn't occur in L.A. Now, these different places around the country have had their share of violence. I'm not denying that. As far as Detroit, being first as one of the most violent, in the top 10 most violent cities, well yeah. And that has to do with poverty and the breakdown of that city. When I was a kid growing up 40 miles south of Detroit, it was the fifth most populous city in the country. Everybody worked. I'm sure they had their share of violence back then. They had a lot of mafia types that lived in Detroit, the big mafia family, the Licata family, in Detroit and Toledo and Cleveland. But, not the kind of violence that you find in the South. And, you know, I meant, no disrespect to the people who live in the South. Good Lord. I mean, some of our biggest supporters for this program are Southerners. And, you know, one of my two business partners is a Southerner. I'm married just like Scott points out. You know, I'm sorry to get into all this. I'm just trying to say that I was trying to quote statistics about the South. The one thing I don't like about the South is the religious hypocrisy. Now, granted, you find it all over the place. I'm not denying that. But it's especially choking and cloying and disgusting here in the South. But Scott, you know, I'm very happy with the people the woman I'm married to and the children I've raised and the fact that the people I know here in the South are not these kind of redneck violence-prone freaks. But it does exist here. That's all I was trying. That's the only point I was trying to make. That's it. That's the only point. And, you know, I could be wrong on the statistics, but I'm talking about overall. Overall, what does that mean? Does that mean going back to the 1860s? No, I'm talking about modern times. Maybe it's the heat and the humidity. Maybe it's the gnats or the no-see-ums. Of course, if you use some of Alice in Arkansas as insect repellent, you'll never be bothered by the no-see-ums. All right, no offense, Scott. I really didn't mean to offend an individual, especially somebody who's such a great supporter of this program. And as Scott signs off, a liberal, peace-loving Southern boy. Well, me too. Well, I'm not Southern. I could be here for 70 years and I'd never be considered a Southerner, not by the people that live here. You're either born here or you're not. Okay? No offense, Scott. Well, I'm saying that a lot lately to people. No offense, but. Speaking of the South, we're going to take a break here. We're going to come back. I have a story from Kentucky that is more about anti-woman violence, not just the physical kind, but anti-woman violence that can be imposed by the American judicial system. You may have heard about this story. A girl, 17 years old, is facing contempt charges because she named the people who attacked her after she was at a party and got drunk and got raped. And a video was made, and God knows where the video wound up. We're going to talk about that in a minute when we come back. All right? Oh, yeah. Going to be a fun night. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Time Lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. This story, I think, speaks volumes about... I'm going to get some disagreement on this, I'm sure, but I think it speaks volumes on the difference between how a young woman is treated by the American criminal justice system in some instances, not all, and how, in this case, her rapists are treated. The story is a 17-year-old girl in Kentucky, in Louisville, who was upset by the plea deal reached by a pair of teenagers who sexually assaulted her. And she tweeted their names, which was in violation of a court order, and now she's facing a contempt charge that carries a possible sentence of 180 days in jail and a $500 fine. Her name is Savannah Dietrich, and she and her parents have gone totally public on this. She told the Louisville newspaper, the Courier-Journal, that she's frustrated by what she feels is a lenient deal for her attackers. After posting the names of her attackers on Twitter, Dietrich wrote, quote, "I'm not protecting anyone that made my life a living hell," end quote. Now, most news organizations do not report the names of sexual assault victims, but this young woman and her parents say they don't want to shield her identity and they want her case to be public. The young men who attacked her, the attorneys for those two, have asked a judge to hold the victim in contempt for violating the confidentiality of this hearing and the judge's order not to speak about it. The young woman told the Louisville Courier-Journal that she was assaulted last August by two boys that she knew when she passed out after drinking at a party. She learned months later that pictures of the assault were taken and shared with other people. She said, "For months I cried myself to sleep. I couldn't go out in public places. I just sat there and wondered who saw the pictures. Who knows?" Now, her attorneys want her contempt hearing open to the media, arguing that she has a First Amendment right to speak about her case and she has a right to a public hearing. The attorney for the boys has asked the judge to keep the hearing closed. Now, the boys pled guilty about a month ago to first-degree sexual abuse and misdemeanor voyeurism. Not to rape, first-degree sexual abuse. The young woman said she was unaware of a plea agreement until just before it was announced in court. In other words, she's saying nobody consulted her about this. She could not say what the proposed punishment was because of the court order, but she says she feels it was a slap on the wrist, you know, to the two young men who assaulted her. When the judge told everyone at the hearing not to speak about what happened in court or about the crime, the young woman said she cried. She said, quote, "They got off very easy, and they tell me to be quiet, just silencing me at the end." And after, end quote, after the judge's order, Dietrich tweeted, quote, "They said I can't talk about it or I'll be locked up. Protect rapists is more important than getting justice for the victim in Louisville." Now, a specialist in media law said the young woman should have tried to get the court to vacate the gag order rather than simply violating it. But the executive director of the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press said the young woman should, quote, not be legally barred from talking about what happened to her. That's a wide-ranging restraint on speech, end quote. The same executive director of the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press said this sort of issue is becoming more common. He said, quote, "In the past, people would complain to anyone who would listen, but they didn't have a way to publish their comments where there would be a permanent record, like on Facebook and Twitter, for people to see worldwide," end quote. And the young woman said she just needed to stand up for herself. She said, quote, "I'm at the point that if I have to go to jail for my rights, I will do it," end quote. So the triple attack on this woman. I mean, I don't want to get into a big debate with an attorney, but the triple attack on her, she's assaulted, and a lot of people say, well, why'd she get drunk? Getting drunk is not an invitation to have a couple of boys rape you. It isn't. So not only is she sexually assaulted, but then a plea deal is made that she has no knowledge of, and apparently the boys got off with what she considered to be a slap on the wrist, and now that she's gone public with what happened to her, she's now facing jail and a fine. So like I said, this is about the bias, the anti-woman bias that exists everywhere. See, this is why I'll never be an official Southerner. I said that the Klan got started in southern Indiana. Actually, it was in Pulaski, Tennessee in the 1860s, I think. Anyway, thanks. Who sent that to me? Somebody sent that to me. Tom. Thanks, Tom. And an update here that I got from Corey in Louisville. The teenage rape victim, 17-year-old Savannah Dietrich, will not go to jail for naming those who assaulted her. The lawyer for the two men who pled guilty filed a motion to hold her in contempt. And there was a small degree of justice today. The lawyer, David Mejia, M-E-J-I-A, David Mejia, withdrew the contempt motion. However, he wasn't done insulting the victim. This is from today's Courier Journal in Louisville. Quote, Mejia was obviously angry with Ms. Dietrich's actions, saying his client's, quote, privacy has been trampled. He's accused of things he didn't do. Anybody who looks at the postings online believes things about this kid that are false, but there's nothing I can do about that, end quote. He went on to say, quote, I can't stop this teen, and she put it out there. She put everybody's names out there. We went to court hoping she would come to her senses after the tweets, adding the laws of confidentiality in juvenile court were written to protect the victim, but, quoting the lawyer again, apparently she didn't want to be protected, end quote. So this was in a Louisville newspaper, Leo, that's a weekly paper. The writer said, yeah, how dare this girl not want to be protected and not come to her senses enough to not trample on the privacy of the boys who pled guilty to sexually assaulting her? Why, the nerve of her violating the privacy of two young men who widely distributed photos of each of them sexually assaulting her. Take a bow for that wonderful piece of legal logic, David Mejia. Yeah, so it just doesn't stop. So she gets insulted for a fourth time, or assaulted for a fourth time. The lawyer for the boys withdrew the contempt, the request for a contempt hearing, but in the process of doing it, he slams the girl again. Jesus God. Penn State, the punishment to Penn State was announced today, $60 million fine. And by the way, it's the largest fine, I guess, ever imposed, but keep it in perspective, it represents about 1 year of football revenue. 1 year. However, the $60 million will go to a child sex abuse awareness programs, or several of them. The NCAA also said a four-year ban on Penn State going to postseason bowl games. The NCAA also said scholarship reduction, I think down to where they're only allowed 10 football scholarships for the next 4 years. Next, any entering or returning football student athlete can transfer immediately. Presuming academic requirements are met, these potential transfers can play with their new team immediately. And then this, Penn State vacates all wins from 1998 to 2011, which means 111 of the wins under Coach Joe Paterno are erased. That drops him from atop the all-time win list to number 12. And Penn State begins a five-year probationary period with the NCAA reserving the right to implement further punishment. I tend to agree. I stay away from stories like this because I think sports has become nothing but a system of pimps and sex workers. That's all it is. It's really gross and horrible. Intercollegiate sports, I have no problem with intercollegiate sports, but I think the it's like everything else. Money has totally corrupted it. We all know this. We don't talk about it. You know, I live in Georgia. University of Georgia Bulldog fans are like goddamn rabid dogs, which makes them no different from Alabama fans or Clemson fans or Penn State fans or UCLA fans or what have you. I mean, it really is an obscenity. It's like these filthy, stinking Olympics. It's nothing but another money sinkhole. That's all it is. You know it. I know it. Let's not pretend like, oh, no, Mike, sports are holy, holy. It's when they become holy, holy that this stuff happens, just like in the Catholic Church. It's the same thing. But to erase 111 wins from a dead coach, I don't know what that's about. I've heard arguments today by people who are in the sports world as writers and so on and so forth saying that that was kind of ridiculous. The person being punished is dead. You know, if they want to take down a statue, okay, but, you know, the fact that they won games didn't have anything to do with an assistant coach raping boys in the shower. I don't know. I stay away from these stories because they're insane to me. But then I got an email from Lady Callahan III, and she writes, Mike, what do you think would have happened if the boy seen in the shower with Sandusky had been named Paterno, say a grandson of Joe Pa? I bet it would have changed the actions of all involved, from the assistant coach who saw the scene and ran home to call his daddy, to the great cover-up by Paterno himself. Do you think Sandusky would have ever been found in his cement shoes? I'll bet he would have been missing some body parts, or they would have been stuffed into his mouth. Lady Callahan, Camano Island, Washington. And I like her, under her sig line says, going to church doesn't make you a Christian any more than standing in a garage makes you a car. But no, she's right. Yeah, can you imagine if it would have been a paternal grandson? Do you think everybody would have been very quiet to protect the football program at Penn State? Yeah, come on. We all know how that works, don't we? Right? So it just, I don't know. It just the whole thing to me is just madness. And I think what's going to happen to this poor Sandusky bastard, you know, he can issue statements until hell freezes over that he's really innocent. If this guy goes to prison and gets in the general population, he'll be dead within 6 months. You know it, and I know it. We all know it. So, regarding, this is the only thing I'm going to bring up, regarding the theater massacre in Aurora, Colorado. It takes something like that, of course, to bring up another debate about gun control in this sad, dying country. And as I think I found this at Huffington Post, it says, predictably, Democrats have called for tightening restrictions on some kinds of weapons used by the alleged shooter. Republicans have rejected any idea about gun control. However, conservative pundit Bill Kristol bucked the party line on Fox News Sunday yesterday after host Chris Wallace pointed out that there has been declining support from the public for gun control. Bill Kristol said he thought the Democrats should push it more. Kristol said, quote, people have a right to handguns and hunting rifles. I don't think they have a right to semi-automatic quasi-machine guns that can shoot hundreds of bullets at a time. And I actually think the Democrats are being foolish as they are being cowardly. I think there is more support for some moderate form of gun control, end quote. And one of the other freaks on the Rupert Murdoch Terror Broadcast Network panel said, good luck with that, Bill! To which Kristol replied, President Obama on this one is just unwilling to take a strong stance, end quote. And of course, to prove his point, Jay Carney, White House spokesman, said the same day that no new gun control legislation is in the offing. Of course not. But Bill Kristol now, somebody will send him the severed head of a horse, I'm sure. The right wing now will turn. See, the right wing, they turn on their own like goddamn dogs on a wild dogs on a corpse. They just, I don't know. It may have already happened today because Kristol, and Kristol is one of the neocons. The fact that he's Jewish will probably make them go after him even more. Because there's nothing these right-wing white male Christian fundamentalist teabaggers hate more. Well, they hate black people or blah people, but they also hate Jews. They just don't like to talk about it. So I would expect Kristol is going to get all kinds of hate mail and comments from the right-wing punditocracy. We'll be right back.
Right now, here's Mike Malloy.
I need this hopeless feeling, like I need a hole in my head. Give up my whole day's wages to get this hole in the wall. I call a hostel that is empty, just a gun to the head.
10 before the hour. To show you the effectiveness of Glenn Beck and Michelle Bachman and other Republican scum, including Representative Trent Frank, Louis Gohmert, Thomas Rooney, and Lynn Westmoreland. What has happened here, Huma Abedin, top aide to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and the wife of former Representative Anthony Weiner, you know, him with the expanded jockey shorts. Anyway, this woman has been placed under extra security after being, her life has been threatened. Now the New York Post reports. This comes after Michelle Bachmann and four Republican members of Congress claim that Ms. Sabeedin has ties to the Muslim Brotherhood through her family. According to the New York Post, the man who threatened Abedin, and I'm sure there's going to be more than just one, he's been questioned by police. He's not been charged. As Salon reports, this tide of Islamophobia that threatened to drown the political scene in the summer of 2010 over the debate about what the critics were calling the Ground Zero Mosque, remember that? That has kind of receded because the right-wing scum in this country haven't been talking about it as much. But with another election coming, Bachmann is already ahead of the crowd in raising this kind of hatred again. Salon reports she, joined by Republican representatives Trent Franks, Louis Gohmert, Thomas Rooney, and Lynn Westmoreland, sent letters to the inspectors general of five government agencies responsible for national security to demand they investigate infiltration by the Muslim Brotherhood into the highest reaches of the federal government. Now, for those of you over a certain age, you may remember, well, you were too young to remember it, as I was. I just remember my mother telling me about it. The claims made by Joe McCarthy that communists had infiltrated the highest levels of the federal government. Remember that? These goddamn right-wingers. You know, I wish every one of them would just go ahead and just rapture into the arms of your demon and forget about it. Just get the hell out of here. Why don't you? Why don't you hate mongers all just leave? Catch the next comet. Buy yourself some Nikes and some blue track suits and follow the lead of the people who went to... What was the last comet that they all jumped on, Kathy? Quixote? It wasn't Quixotec. What was it? It doesn't matter. But that's what I wish you... Was it Hale Bob? I don't know. That's what I wish these right-wingers would do. And I wish Glenn Beck would lead them. Come on, Glenn. Go buy your blue tracksuit and your new Nikes. And you know what to do. Just take your followers and jump on the next comet or meteor that comes close to the Earth and go to your own particular little world where you can all sit around and do your ugliness. But anyway, Bachmann has singled out Huma Abedin, the wife of, like I said, former Congressman Weiner, top aide to Hillary Clinton. It says here, in case Abedin hasn't already been through enough already, Bachmann is now questioning her loyalty to the U.S. by asserting that she has family members who are connected to the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, she has been targeted before by anti-Muslim activists. That would be Beck and the rest of the pigs. And Bachmann notes that Abedin's position, quote, affords her routine access to the secretary and to policymaking, end quote. Oh, my God. Another letter targets the Department of Defense, which Bachmann and her gang of halfwits accuse of failing, quote, to characterize accurately the jihadist motivations of Major Nidal Hassan, that's the Army psychiatrist in the Fort Hood shooting. Third letter went to the Department of Homeland Security, alleging that that department is covering up the Muslim Brotherhood threat by developing an official lexicon that obfuscates its danger. Another letter went to the Department of Justice Inspector General warning that officials there had been meeting with Muslim groups that Bachmann accuses of being front organizations for the Muslim Brotherhood. And the final letter went to the Office of the Director of National Intelligence saying, quote, we request that your office conduct a formal investigation or evaluation into the extent to which the Muslim Brotherhood tied individuals and entities were involved in actions they deem improper. See, I wish Bachmann would lead the jump off to the next comet that flies by. Please, Michelle, could you do that? I mean, come on. Was it Hale Bob? You know, the name of the group was Heaven's Gate now. And that's right. It was the Heaven's Gate Clan. Remember that interesting photograph where they're all laying on bunk beds with their brand new Nike sneakers and their blue tracksuits? Remember that? And when I think of that picture and think, you know, what if all the right-wing hate mongers were to do that? I think I would look at that picture for the rest of my life and just sing the praises of the comet god. You know what I'm saying? We'll be back after the break. It's joint stretch. Springs, he writes, Mike, it's sobering to think how things would have been different, could have been, might have been different at Penn State if Sandusky had been referred to the police and charged for the shower incident. Penn State and Joe Paterno could have avoided all this, and Sandusky would not have been free to assault others. It's always the cover-up, isn't it? Penn State is getting off light compared to what should have been done. Kevin in Colorado Springs. And from Malachi in Canada, regarding the situation in Kentucky, the young woman, Malachi writes, the situation in Kentucky reminded me of another case recently. This was from last summer. The Supreme Court declined to review the case of a recent Texas high school student who was kicked off her school's cheerleading squad after she refused to chant the name of a basketball player who had allegedly raped her. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, one of the most conservative courts in the country, ruled the previous November that the victim, who is known only as HS, had no right to refuse to applaud her attacker because as a cheerleader in uniform, she was an agent of the school. To add insult to injury, the Fifth Circuit dismissed her case as frivolous and forced the girl and her family to pay the school district's $45,000 in legal fees. One reporter summed up this miscarriage of justice by writing, quote, the Supreme Court's refusal to hear the case is a devastating rejection of students' rights to speak out against school officials and a disturbing affirmation of a culture that punishes rape victims instead of perpetrators, end quote. What anti-woman bias are those damn liberals always talking about, huh? You want to know how homophobia spreads? I don't need to educate you on this, but here's an example from Huffington Post. Also, the Palin family has never been known for being particularly gay-friendly. And now it seems that the youngest member of this clan of halfwits is following in the footsteps of his elders. A newly released clip from the Lifetime reality series, Bristol Palin, Life's a Trip, shows 3-year-old Trip Palin uttering a homophobic slur when his mom, Bristol Palin, and his aunt, Willow Palin, won't let him visit the swimming pool. The Palin sisters gasp and then giggle when 3-year-old Tripp's temper tantrum culminates in the tot calling his aunt a faggot. It's a 3-year-old. Though Bristol does confess that she's, quote, doing a terrible job disciplining Tripp, I know he's going to continue to push the boundaries, end quote. Her son's behavior doesn't seem too out of step, given his family's history of anti-gay activity. 2 years ago, Willow sparked controversy when she fired off at a classmate on Facebook, referring to him as so gay, he's such a faggot. So here you have a 3-year-old. Now, for all the white folks out there who say, I'm not a racist, you're referring to yourself, I'm not a racist. White people in this country were raised that way. I'm not saying that your parents used the N-word, but come on. I don't want to start that conversation again. So there you have little 3-year-old Tripp calling his aunt a faggot. A Nebraska community is rallying response to a violent home invasion and assault, which many have alleged was an anti-gay hate crime. Alleged. Well, this happened in Lincoln, Nebraska. The Lincoln newspaper reports that a woman whose name has not been released told police she was attacked over the weekend by 3 masked men who broke into her home, bound her with zip ties before carving homophobic slurs into her skin, dumping gasoline on the floor of her house, and lighting it with a match. Now, this is an alleged anti-gay hate crime. Immediately following the assault, the woman, who's in her 30s, managed to walk to a neighbor's home to get help. The neighbor confirmed that the victim is a lesbian and also noted that all 3 anti-gay epithets, including the word dyke, were carved on the woman's arms and stomach. Other friends told local ABC News affiliate KLKN television that anti-gay slurs were also found spray-painted throughout the woman's basement. Oh, no, no, this is just an alleged anti-gay hate crime. You know, just alleged. Investigators say it was too early to determine whether or not the assault was a hate crime. Jesus Christ. One friend of the victim told KLKN television, quote, when somebody takes the time to handcuff someone with a zip tie and carve derogatory comments or words into somebody else's body, that's sheer hate. That is a hate crime. Jesus, last night a candlelight vigil was held at the state capitol. About 500 people showed up. And Chick-fil-A, I guess you've been following this. You know, that was the one place where occasionally I would take Molly and get her a chicken sandwich. You know, I've said a million times, I do not let my kid eat fast food. And I guess what I've referred to are the usual suspects. But Truett Cathy, who's the owner, is from Georgia. And he has, now, I don't know if you know this, but he has a system for his employees, the kids that work for him. And if they work for him a certain number of years, I think, for every year they work for him, he will pay 1 year of their college education. And, you know, I thought that he's a fundamentalist Christian. And I thought, well, that's, you know, that's a, regardless of his craziness where it concerns religion, that's a pretty good thing to do. So I didn't have a lot of terrible trouble going there occasionally for a chicken sandwich. I know. Don't write to me and tell me about what happened to the chicken. I understand all that. Occasionally I would let Molly have a chicken sandwich. But Chick-fil-A has come under considerable fire for its documented support of anti-gay Christian organizations. And in a new interview with the Baptist Press, this is, I think, last week, Chick-fil-A president Dan Cathy, the son of Truett Cathy, addresses what the Baptist Press describes as Chick-fil-A's, quote, support of the traditional family, end quote. And when asked about being anti-gay, Dan Cathy said, well, guilty as charged. He went on to note, we're very much supportive of the family, the biblical definition of the family. We are a family-owned business, a family-led business, and we are married to our first wives. We give God thanks for that. We know that it might not be popular with everyone, but thank the Lord we live in a country where we can share our values and operate on biblical principles. Now, this guy, Chick-fil-A president, reiterated his stance. He was on a program called The Ken Coleman Show. And on that show, he said, I think you are inviting God's judgment on our nation when we shake our fist at him and say, we know better than you as to what constitutes a marriage. And I pray God's mercy on our generation that has such a prideful, arrogant attitude to think that we have the audacity to define what marriage is about. End quote. More on this when we come back. So the family of Truett Cathy, the owners of founders of Chick-fil-A, in the typical evangelical Christian smugness, informs the world that there's only one family that is recognized by God, and that is the family that they believe in, one man, one woman. And as Lee writes from New York City, did the Chick-fil-A president buy his wife like Jacob did in the Bible? Was it cash, or did he work off the debt? You know, these Christian fundamentalists who say, well, you know, we go by the Bible. We did it. So it's a good question, Lee. I have no idea. But the son of the founder, the now president, Dan Cathy, again, he said, we're inviting God's judgment on our nation when we shake our fist at him. Shake our fist at him. Like a couple of people who want to form a marriage contract and go down to the courthouse that has nothing to do with God and ask for a license to get married. And the Christian freaks out here in the world tell them that that's shaking their fist in God's face. Really? I had no idea. When we tell God we know better than you do as to what constitutes a marriage, I didn't know God had ever made a marriage. Did he? He created a man who was capable of giving birth. I mean, that's kind of a freak of nature. Do you really believe that? Do you think that Adam gave birth to Eve? Do you? Well, aren't you a half-wit? Um, Kathy, this guy, Dan Kathy, had previously shrugged off all the criticisms. In an interview last year at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and he called blogosphere reports on his company's donations to all of these anti-gay activist organizations like Marriage and Family Foundation, $1 million, Exodus International. Those are the ones that say, we'll cure you being a queer. Family Research Council. You know, these are organizations that get donations from the money we all spend on our little crispy Chick-fil-A's. That's the end of it, Kathy. I mean, I'm not going to take Molly back. I just can't. We'll make her chicken here at home. We get fried chicken at the farmer's market. That's pretty good. In February, Northeastern University officials, where is that, Boston, said no to plans for a campus-based franchise after student concerns reflected Chick-fil-A's history of donating to anti-gay organizations. And in the interview in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the reports about his company's donations, which anyone can find out, for God's sake, Dan Cathy called it folklore. Folklore? Folklore. How about this for folklore? I wonder if Dan Cathy and Truett Cathy and the rest of these Christian fundamentalists, I wonder if they were happy and proud when in 1983 Sally Ride became the first American woman to fly in space on the Challenger. She died today at the age of 61, pancreatic cancer. And Sally Ride was a lesbian. She is survived by her partner, Tam O'Shaughnessy, as well as her mother, sister, niece, and nephew. But I just wonder if all the Christian fundamentalists around the country, I wonder if they would have known that Sally Ride was a lesbian when she was selected to become an astronaut and then actually flew in space. I wonder if, I don't seem to remember. Of course, it was back in the 80s, and the whole issue of homosexuality had not been politicized. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not talking about, sure, it had been with Reagan. It took Reagan until about 10,000 Americans died of AIDS before he even talked about it. But you know what I'm saying. Come on. Don't put too fine a point on it. It had not been politicized to the point that it is now. The religious freaks had not come out of the closet, so to speak, with their screaming and frothing at the mouth and jumping up and down about gay people. But I just wonder what the attitude would have been back in 1983 if all these Christian freaks who just are so anti-Jesus, it's nauseating, if they would have realized that Sally Ride was a lesbian. Oh, well.
Because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
25 before the hour. If you read the Times, I think it was this morning, Caterpillar is at it again. Not the bug, but the manufacturer of the heavy equipment manufacturer. Caterpillar has long taken an attitude with organized labor that they just weren't going to deal with it. Last year, Caterpillar had a record $5 billion profit. And the projections are they're going to do even better this year. So in order to reward the workers who were responsible for producing the product that was sold on the global market that gave Caterpillar a $5 billion profit, you got to wonder how much tax they paid on that, huh? To reward their workers, Caterpillar is now insisting on a 6-year wage freeze and a pension freeze for the 800 production workers at the factory in Joliet, Illinois. Caterpillar says it needs to keep the labor costs down to ensure its future competitiveness. Now, this stance by Caterpillar angered the workers, and they went on strike 12 weeks ago. One striker, a 19-year Caterpillar employee, said, quote, considering the offer they gave us, it's a strike we had to have. Now, Caterpillar has significantly raised its executives' pay because of the strong profits. The executives built the machinery. The executives sold the machinery. The executives bought the machinery. It doesn't matter, but the executives' pay at Caterpillar has been increased, New York Times word, significantly. Saying, well, the unionized workers are paid well above market rates. So now what are they doing? Well, during the strike, of course, what the company is doing is using replacement workers, some low-level managers, and a few union members who have crossed the picket line, you know, scabs. According to the Times, the showdown, which has no end in sight, is being closely watched by corporations and unions across the country because it involves two often uncompromising antagonists. You see, this is where I hate the way this is being written. Two uncompromising antagonists: International Association of Machinists and Caterpillar. It's not a true statement. The Machinist Union have agreed to give backs over the years or agreed to different kinds of wage or pension freezes in the past. So it is not uncompromising antagonists. There's one uncompromising antagonist here. A professor of industrial relations at Cornell said, quote, Caterpillar has been a leader in the past 20 years in taking a hard line. In other words, in trying to destroy unions. Last winter, Caterpillar locked out 450 workers at its locomotive plant in London, Ontario, Canada, and then closed the factory after the union rejected its demands to cut wages by 55%. Jesus Christ. In the mid-1990s, the company vanquished, according to the New York Times, United Automobile Workers, after a 17-month strike by 9,000 workers at 8 factories, and the union eventually surrendered and accepted the company's concession-filled offer. So I would ask the writer of this at the New York Times, Stephen Greenhouse, what do you mean, Mr. Greenhouse, two uncompromising antagonists. What the hell are you talking about? Oh, well. Robert Bruno, a labor relations professor, University of Illinois, said Caterpillar was trying to drive compensation, pay, down to a new floor. This guy says, quote, Caterpillar sees this as the new normal. While this union feels you have to draw a line in the sand to hold on. Some people are saying, he goes on, the union should be more deferential, more compliant, that it's a bad time to strike. You know, how can you counter a powerful multinational in this economy, right? Now, Caterpillar is insisting on a wage freeze. Now, you know, as I read this morning, I kept thinking what Obama said during the campaign in 2010. Yeah, I'm pro-union. If there's strikes there, union, I'm paraphrasing, but he left the impression that if the union workers needed him, he would join them on a picket line as soon as he could find, his words, a comfortable pair of shoes. Well, this has been going on now for a number of months, Mr. President. 3 months. Well, what are you waiting for? You abandoned the public sector workers in Wisconsin, so you're going to abandon the private sector workers in Illinois, right? It's your home state, dude. It's Joliet, Illinois. No? Not going to go there? Too busy getting reelected? Okay, we understand. Anyway, Caterpillar's insisting on a wage freeze for its top-tier workers, those employed 7 years or more. They average $26 an hour, or $55,000 a year, before overtime. Now, for the junior third of the workers, who typically earn $12 to $19 an hour, see, they have this tier system, just like the auto industry does. The United Auto Workers agreed to it also. Just beat the unions into the ground. We don't need a middle class anymore. Anyway, the about a third of the workers who have been there less than 7 years earn about $12 to $19 an hour. And Caterpillar has lied by suggesting that it might, possibly, maybe, someday, who knows, raise their wages based on local market conditions. Local market conditions in Joliet, Illinois? Really? Wow. What would you raise $19 an hour to? $19.50, maybe? Now, Caterpillar has also tried to bribe the union workers by offering them one-time payments, modest one-time payments, but it is also demanding higher health care contributions from its workers. Caterpillar wants each worker to pay $1,900 a year more than they are now. That's an extra, what would it be, $150 a month? Now, the company's profit last year, the profit, after everything, worked out to $40,000 a worker. That's after everybody's been paid, whatever cheesy taxes Caterpillar's going to pay, all of the top-flight compensation to the executives, after everything was factored in, the company had a profit of $40,000 per employee. Boy, the productivity of the American worker, huh? You put the Germans to shame. But how does Caterpillar want to reward these productive workers? By kicking them in the groin, all of them. All of them. The union says Caterpillar wants a pay and pension freeze for longtime workers to push them into retirement. You know, if they tell them, well, you're never going to get another raise, your pension is going to stay right where it is, in the hope that a lot of the workers will get so discouraged and they'll quit or retire, and then Caterpillar can replace those workers with $13 an hour workers. Huh? A nice take-it-or-leave-it contract. More in a second. Stick around. Caterpillar, that's the company that produced the bulldozer that murdered Rachel Corrie in the occupied territories of Israel.
Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
It's come through a hole in the air from those nets in Tiananmen Square.
10 before the hour.
It's come from the field.
So Caterpillar, while they have record earnings, $5 billion profit last year, gave all their executives substantial increases in pay and bonuses. Now they want to cut workers' pay in half. The $26 an hour, they want to get rid of those workers and hire a bunch of people for $13. Caterpillar workers have been on strike for the past 3 months. Now, to show you, Caterpillar is kind of the trendsetter where it comes to the destruction of unions in this country. Detroit automakers, for example, followed Caterpillar's lead in using this two-tier wage system. And not just that, but also lengthy contracts. You know, sign somebody up for 6 years. They can't do anything if they want to work. Now, if they want to work and pay off their house or buy a car or go in with some of their friends and buy a fishing boat or a cabin on Lake Erie, forget about it. Those days are gone. Those days are gone. You want health care? Forget about it. Now they have a special health care trust fund set up to where you can fight with the insurance company that runs it to decide whether or not you're going to get coverage that you need for whatever it is you need it for. The people who are striking receive $150 a week in strike benefits. And one of the people walking the picket line, according to the New York Times, said he didn't have the $40 needed for his 11-year-old son to play Little League this year. And I know what the cynics among you are saying. $40? The man didn't have $40. He didn't save any money at $40. I thought you said they were making $26 an hour. Well, it's not for you or me to have insider information about what's going on in the person's family. We don't know where the money's going. Maybe he's taking care of co-payments for a spouse's cancer treatment or something. You know, nobody knows. But the man says, he told the New York Times reporter, no, I don't have it this year. How about that? $40. Caterpillar has added about 6,500 jobs in the United States over the past year. Now, according to Republicans, of course, that's nonsense. The Obama administration hasn't added anything. Well, of course, the Obama administration other than hiring people to work for the Obama administration, doesn't hire people to work for Caterpillar. Now, I know you can't explain that to a right-wing half-ass, but it's the truth, right-wing half-asses. Caterpillar decides who they're going to hire. Whether they pay them $13 an hour or $6 an hour, it doesn't make any difference, but it's Caterpillar, and they have added 6,500 jobs this year. They quote another worker, another striker, a woman who, after 2 years, earns $15 an hour. She said she couldn't afford a six-year wage freeze, and didn't trust Caterpillar to follow through with the hinted raise for its lower-paid workers. You know, if you are good little field hands, if you're good little slaves, maybe, perhaps, possibly, not next year, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, not the year after, giggle, giggle, but maybe 3 or 4 years down the road, you won't be making $15 an hour. You might be making $15.50. Be a good little field hand. And as this woman said, we're the people who busted our butts so they would make record profits. We shouldn't be treated like this. Well, you shouldn't be, but this is what capitalism is all about. It's never, ever enough for the people at the top. Even you teabag halfwits, if you don't know that, then you're dumber than I think you are. And you teabag halfwits are never going to be in that group of the privileged. The privileged look at you teabag halfwits and laugh their asses off because you're the brown shirts out there doing their dirty work. I bet you're all Christians too, right? Because I know you hate Jews and you hate blah people. But it's never enough. The capitalist bosses, here's a company that made $6 billion in profit last year. I mean, they made $40,000 roughly in profit per worker. And it's not enough. They made that profit, keep in mind, by paying a good percentage of their workforce $26 an hour. That's how they made the profit, with productive workers. But no! We want more! We don't want a pound of your flesh. We want a pound plus. So they're offering these cheesy one-time buyout packages in the hopes, this is what the auto industry does, in the hopes that people would just give up and say, okay, give me the 80,000. Now, these are workers who are in their 50s. So 80 grand? Please. All right, give me the 80,000. I'm out of here. So they can replace the $42 an hour worker with one who will work for 14. But I'll tell you what, you teabaggers, you white folks, you conservatives, you right-wingers, you just keep on supporting those neo-fascists. Someday they're going to come for your ass. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Phone lines are open if you want to check in. 877-996-2556 is the number. 877-996-2556. So join us if you like. Dino, north of Toronto, writes, Mike, one thing that I didn't hear you mention about the Caterpillar plant closure in London, Ontario, is that the company received tax incentives and other monetary incentives from the federal government in here, and when they left town, they didn't pay the taxpayers back. They took the money and ran. Another fine corporate citizen. Yeah, that happens all the time, too. I'm not surprised that it happens in Canada, although I would have thought that the provincial government in Ontario would have, maybe they're prohibited by law, but you would think that they would have included something in their giveaways to the corporation, in this case Caterpillar, that says, you know, if you take off, if you abandon your promise, you owe us money. I don't know what happened, but I would think that would be a fair thing to do. Alexander Coburn died Friday after a long battle with, I believe, pancreatic cancer. Dave Lindorf, who is who is a writer. And also, Lindorf's site is, what is it called? Lindorf writes for Truth Out, but I think he has his own site also, doesn't he? This Can't Be Happening. That's right. He's a founder of thiscan'tbehappening.com. He writes, he wrote a very interesting, there's several obituaries out there, there will be more. But Lindorf wrote, I think today, Alex was a scourge of the capitalist elites and their fawning apologists in the corporate media. He also played an important role as a merciless critic of the so-called progressive journalists who lost their courage, sold out, or were simply wrong on an issue. It was just a matter of disagreeing. If it was just a matter of disagreeing about a specific issue, say climate change, where Alexander remained a skeptic, he could be courteous and respectful in his dismissal of an argument, but woe to those, like the late Christopher Hitchens, or even his own editors at The Nation, whom Alex concluded had sold out their own leftist principles. Lindorf writes, I was particularly grateful to Alex in that regard back in January 2004 when he came unasked to my defense in both Counterpunch and A Nation column, Beat the Devil, tackling Nation editor Katrina VandenHeuvel and others for their criticism of an article I had written almost a year earlier about the looming Iraq invasion in which I compared President George W. Bush to Adolf Hitler. As Alex wrote at the time, quote, Hitler-Bush comparisons began their current vogue after an article by Dave Lindorf appeared last February here on counterpunch.org, to which Lindorf is a regular and valued contributor. In a full-bore attack on Bush's warmonger, Lindorf wrote, quote, it's going a bit far to compare the Bush of 2003 to the Hitler of 1933, Bush simply is not the orator that Hitler was. But comparisons of the Bush administration's fear-mongering tactics to those practiced so successfully and with such terrible results by Hitler and Goebbels on the German people and their Weimar Republic are not at all out of line. End quote. And Coburn wrote, I thought Lindorf's measured assessment of the two leaders' rhetorical talents indicated appropriate objectivity. I don't think you'd see that sort of gentlemanly sense of fair play and politeness from the likes of writers on the Wall Street Journal or that fat, lying, drug-addicted hypocrite Rush Limbaugh. Lindorf goes on, I want to share this with you. He writes, as a journalist who once wrote that his early Catholic school education had effectively inoculated him against religion, I'm sure Alex is not resting in peace in some heavenly Eden. But in the event that both he and I are wrong, and there is an afterlife, I'm equally sure that Alex isn't just ambling around in a toga there. As he demonstrated with his scathing demolition of the banking industry and the LIBOR scandal, which was written on his deathbed and published shortly before he died, but conveniently ignored by the New York Times in its Sunday obituary, he'd more likely be busy continuing to fire off his always devastatingly witty editorial fusillades at the powerful and their journalistic enablers here on this mortal coil. So, with the death of Alexander Coburn, a fierce critic of the filth that is capitalism and the even, some would say, worst filth of the journalists in this country, so-called, who will not attack capitalism. May he, I can't say rest in peace. I mean, he's dead. His body is rotting, you know. He's gone. That's the end of it. But I certainly appreciated what he wrote. The only area I ever had a disagreement with Coburn in my little tiny world, when I would read his columns and I would sit there and go, wait a minute. You know what you do when somebody who is so far above you in stature as a writer or a journalist or an orator or an opinion maker, whatever. I would sit there in my little tiny corner of the world and go, wait a minute, every time he would write something poo-pooing, and I use that term the way it sounds, he would poo-poo anybody who claimed that global climate change was afoot or in effect. That was something that Coburn just refused to acknowledge. But you got to respect somebody who's writing about the LIBOR scandal as he is dying of pancreatic cancer. So, I don't know about you, Truth Seeker, but I certainly am going to miss reading his columns. Right? Tom is in Bullhead City, Arizona.
Yeah, is that Richard?
Still.
Coburn?
Alexander Coburn.
Alexander, I'm
right.
Sorry. Yeah, I remember reading some of his stuff. Anyway, yeah, thank you for not talking about the gun stuff. It's just a circular argument, and I'm just dizzy from it.
Yeah.
And thank you. And then, certainly, I have no teeth in me tonight. I have no teeth. I went down to Mexico and I had to get my teeth done and I got to go back, you know?
Oh, okay.
And so I got to get my dentures fitted.
Now, why do you want us to know about this, Tom?
Well, this is about what?
All right, wait a minute. Let me put you on hold because I got to do commercials here. And when we come back, I want you to tell me why you want our massive audience of 38 people to know about your dentures. All right? Fair enough? All right, stay right there, Tom. We'll be right back.
And I remember misinformation follows like a plane. If the plans were changed, oh, 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 if the plans were changed. You can beat us with wires, you can beat us with chains.
past the hour. And we're talking to Tom in Bullhead City, Arizona. All right, you went to Mexico to get your teeth. Your dentures, right?
Yes, sir. The word for the day is Los Algodones. Don't ask me to spell it. The word is Los Algodones. It's outside of Yuma, Arizona.
Yeah.
And you go down there, and you can get, okay, here's what I got for $950. I got a cap. I got a deep cleaning because I got really messed up mouth.
Yeah.
And my gums are bad, you know?
Yeah.
And I got, like, 14 pulled, a plate, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's good. I mean, if I were to do that in L.A., oh, my God.
Okay, so I'm guessing the reason you're telling us this is because this would have cost you a lot more in this country,
oh, yeah.
or
oh yes, oh yes. If I were, it'd be, you know, like $3,000, you know.
Oh,
to do it here in the United States, and the problem is, you know, what's the problem, Mike? You know the problem.
You're right. Well, let me ask you something now. You went to Mexico and went to a Mexican doctor and had some dental work, extensive dental work done. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. I mean, I've got temporary plates. I got permanent plates. I got, like,
now, did
come
you,
back anytime for free.
Did you,
I got, like, you know, everything.
Did you pay for all of this out of pocket?
Yeah.
Okay. So if somebody comes across from Mexico into the United States, as long as they pay out of pocket, of course, nobody would ever do this unless they were insane, then it's okay, right? But if somebody comes across from Mexico to the United States and somehow applies and gets, I don't know, some kind of public assistance and tries...
Yeah, they don't have dental public assistance. That's one thing.
And Mexico doesn't?
No, we don't.
Oh, we don't.
I mean, yeah.
Well, what about
one emergency tooth pull? If you're on access or whatever, you know, you can have one emergency tooth pull.
Well, how does your new teeth work? Are they okay?
I have to go back and get them fixed. That's where, but it's free. But we're driving back in my wife's Mercedes. Ha ha ha! It's so sweet. You know, and I'm going to go back there and get it fixed, and, you know, we're going to party and, like, do the Margaritaville thing, and, you know, it's fine, you know.
Yeah, well, what has to be fixed? They're brand new, aren't they?
The clasp, the clasp.
The clasp?
Yeah, the clasp on the molar. You know,
The thing that holds them in.
Yeah, it's not quite. Yes, it still. Oh God, I hate that because it's gonna have to, every time I hear whee, I tense up. My stomach gets hard. You know, it's like, oh God, you've got to, like, drill that thing up my middle teeth. You know, and, like, make a bigger hole where the clasp would fit.
Well, listen, everything's okay then, right, Tom?
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. I mean, thanks. This is a great call. Thanks.
Okay. Well, take care, and good luck on your next trip to get, you know, everything adjusted. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. Okay. Well, that certainly was interesting. Tom in Bullhead City, who's a very interesting guy. I think that was Blue. I think Tom in Bullhead City is Blue. What do you think? You think, Kathy? No? I don't think there is a Bullhead City, Arizona. I mean, a bullhead, that's a catfish, right? There's no catfish in Arizona, are there?
I think it means literally bullhead.
A bull. Like moo. A bullhead. Oh, so there is a Bullhead City, Arizona. Okay, well, I just, you know, you never know. I mean, but that could be Blue, because Blue used to call us from real places, too. Right? Oh, wait a minute. Somebody just sent me a link to bullheadcity.com. And, of course, the webpage can't be found, so it's a bad link. Okay. I don't know. There is a Bullhead City. Okay. All right. Well, I'd like to go there sometime. Is it? I wonder if it's a big, you know, big place. Bullhead City, Arizona. Okay. All right, we're going to take a break. We have one open line here if you want to call in. 877-996-2556 is the number. We'd be pleased to hear from you this evening about whatever that we've talked about on the program. Stay with us.
We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart. Last on the show, don't get your money's worth. With the show, it has the power of the Yahtzee show. It's a dynamo. The Yahtzee show, it's rock and roll. Oh, right before your eyes, we put a laugh up on the skies. And it laughs until he cries, and he dies, and he dies.
Is blowing in the wind.
Twenty-five before
yes,
the hour.
How many times must a man
get an email here from Greg?
Oh, he can see.
Mike, I live in Lafayette. Well, down here we call it Lafayette, Georgia. I guess it's Lafayette, Indiana, where we have a huge caterpillar plant. After a huge layoff 5 or 6 years ago, 400 plus jobs were lost. They have been rehiring again. However, they are rehiring through one of those nasty employment agencies. The employment agency handling the hiring for caterpillars is a company called Volt, V-O-L-T. If you want to work for 12 or 13 bucks an hour, you have to drive your ass from where you live to Indianapolis to register at Volt. So you have a 1 in 803 chance of getting a job at the company who killed Rachel Corrie back in 2004. Here's a typical link from Volt regarding Caterpillar. And he sent me a link to their one of their web pages, Volt. And they're looking for production distribution technicians and forklift drivers, Lafayette, Indiana. Career focus should be on media and communication. It talks about the company. They're looking for hardworking experience. Well, Volt, it says Volt is a company with offices throughout the U.S., Canada, and Europe, has been serving many of the nation's strongest companies for over 60 years. See, if you go to work for Caterpillar, apparently, through Volt, you're not working for Caterpillar. You're working for Volt. It says, working for Volt Workforce Solutions is an Volt Workforce Solutions? WTF? Is an opportunity for you to become part of a distinguished team of professionals. We are seeking a qualified candidate for a position in a facility located in Lafayette, Indiana. We are looking for hardworking, experienced assembly technicians and forklift drivers. First, second, and third shifts available. Machine shop is available. Requirements: mechanical experience and knowledge, engine knowledge in general, especially regarding diesel engines, ability to read and build off a blueprint, flexible, self-directed individual with a strong sense of teamwork and a good communication skill. Support of safety, quality, and production goals of work area. Be able to move and or lift 50 to 75 pounds consistently. Use useful knowledge of the metric system. 2 or 3 years forklift experience. Blah, blah, blah. Submit your resume today. Volt is an equal opportunity employer. Now, here's what you get. The pay rate is $12.85 to $13.45 an hour. Really? I mean, this is it, huh? This is what Caterpillar is offering through a employment agency. You're always, as Greg wrote, you're never really an employee of Caterpillar. You're always a temp worker. No benefits. No nothing. Caterpillar, the company that made a $5 billion profit off the backs of their workers last year, and they want to make more, and pay their workers less. Jesus God, how much longer? David is in Santa Fe listening on XM. Hello, David.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Good to talk to you. Hey, I wanted to comment on the Caterpillar thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, besides the benefits from their workers, the benefits from all that they sell to these different countries and to our country, chopping off mountaintops, mountaintop removal.
Well, that's right. They're involved in that, I would imagine.
Yeah, I was in heavy construction for a long time, as well as my dad. I mean, back in the 60s, I lived in Pakistan on a huge World Bank project when I was 13. My dad was there, and every piece of equipment there was Caterpillar.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm surprised they only made $5 billion, but I guess they got more competition now. But I wanted to thank you for mentioning Rachel Corrie.
Oh, sure.
Because when you brought the subject up, that's the first thing I thought of. And so, you know, they have no qualms about sending machines to Israel, to Africa, to India, wherever raping and pillaging the land is occurring.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a big part of that. And so is, Hitachi and, you know, the Japanese equipment makers and, you know, any of them anywhere. So they're all part of that big thing. But the thing about the workers, it's sickening. When you said $12 an hour, I almost puked. You know, I was a union worker a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know the benefits of the union, et cetera. But, I mean, the way they're whittling people down to nothing. And, you know, one more thing is, you know, I've been a stonemason for many, many years also.
Uh-huh.
Construction. In the last 3 years, no work, Mike. Zilch. If it weren't for my wife, who is gainful, you know, she does very well, you know, I'd be out on the street.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be out on the streets like many millions of other people, or, you know, hundreds of thousands that are out on the street.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Caterpillar thing and many other similar stories like that, just, they're so disheartening. And I just wanted to comment on that. And, you know,
well, they are. They're definitely disheartening. And I, in a rational world, it would be hard to understand a company that makes a $5 billion profit, that's $5,000 million profit in 1 year.
Yeah.
And they pay their executives incredible pay increases and then want to cut their workers' pay by as much as 50%. And I mean, that, like I say, in a rational world, that would be totally irrational. It doesn't make any sense because it's not the executives who are working on the shop floor. It's the workers. And the workers are organized by the unions to do a good job, to do an efficient job, to do an organized job, and the company pays back their productivity by trying to cut their throats. I don't, like I say, in a rational world, I couldn't understand that. But capitalism does not exist on a rational level. It is totally irrational. It is destructive. It is anti-family. It is anti-life. It's just astonishing. The workers at Caterpillar ought to take over the plant and just produce the product, make the $5 billion profit at the end of the year, distribute it among the workers, and then next year start all over again. But I don't think that'll happen in this country. Yes,
I don't either. I'm pretty discouraged about it. But, you know, yet we, you know, we get up every day and hold out hope that we can somehow affect some kind of change.
Yeah, well.
So I wanted to thank you, Mike, for speaking up about that.
Okay, David, thanks for checking
in. I'll sign off for now. Thank
okay,
you.
Take care. Yeah, if the workers in any Caterpillar plant in the United States decided, you know, we've had enough of this. We're going to take over the plant. We're going to continue to produce. We're going to throw the bosses out on their asses. How long do you think it would take before you would have an Attica-like situation? The troops would be called in. Only it wouldn't be, I don't think it would be state militia. I think federal troops would be called in. And because Homeland Security now provides for such a response in case of such an incident. You know what I mean by Attica. I think you do. Karen is in Lakewood, California. Hello, Karen.
Hey, Mike. I love you and Kathy.
Okay, well, thank you.
I am one of those people. I'm an RN. I spent my whole career, for some reason, my phone's kicking back. I spent my whole career running away from this huge corporation. I do dialysis.
Mm.
And I was outsourced. My whole resume was left this company because it outsourced to here, left this hospital, what else? And finally, I had nowhere to go. I am with that company.
Mm-hmm.
And $10 less an hour. The insurance sucks. It's a job. I have a job.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing, they need me because the people, they have brought nurses in from out of the country. And I always say, I have this German Shepherd, Rommel, and he listens when I tell him once.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. I mean, but, you know, it's all about the shareholder and productivity, and I've never worked so hard in my life. Luckily, I love what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Also, what I wanted to tell you about Bullhead City, you do not ever want to visit there.
Really?
My niece moved to Phoenix. My brother lives in Havasu City, and it is the bastion of old white Republicans. And well, every old woman, if she isn't like 90, looks like Jan Brewer with her face all dried up. We were there, and I said, oh, my God, get me back to California where my Asians and my Latinos and the, you know, token white. I can't. I love diversity.
I hear you. Karen, listen, here comes the commercial train. I got to leave there. Thank you, Karen. I enjoyed hearing from you, really. Take care. Before the hour, Ron in Raleigh writes, Mike, Volt, Manpower, and the rest of them are the future of employment. This new employment scheme is called permatemping. No benefits, no raises, no advancements, and when your contract is up, they kick you to the curb and hire some other poor, desperate slob. I just hope once the baby boom squeezes through the workforce and employees become harder to find, that the new workforce will treat the corporation with the same care as the corporations treat workers now. Ron and Raleigh. Well, if they do, they'll call out the military. Right? Brian is in Everett, Washington, listening online. Hello, Brian.
Yes, some comments on some of the topics you're discussing.
Sure.
One you already know about labor rights or labor issues. And, you know, I've had jobs before, you
mm-hmm.
know, in which I was able to work a certain period of time before there were either some mistakes either on my part or other people's part that led to my untimely being unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that if there were jobs available in which workers, and I think you know this already, so I'm preaching to the choir, you know. And if there were jobs available, then workers could work and provide and put their labor and time and effort into providing products,
mm-hmm.
you know, that would be sold, you know, for you know what we use as money. Then that would be transferred back, you know, into our own economy. See, and this is, I'm just brainstorming. See, what they've been doing is spending money on security, military, police, and kind of unnecessary health care tweaking and stuff like that on people. I think that's trying to manage people, as a, you know, assuming people just can't manage, you know. I think our economic woes come from a misplaced budget. Would you not agree with that?
Sure. Oh, okay. Absolutely. You know,
yeah.
We spend $750 trillion to satisfy the weapons industry, and it makes no sense.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Every year we spend that, and that's the money we know about.
Yeah. Well, and then I was also thinking. Oh, you still there? These. I'm sorry. I'm just so full of ideas. It just goes so fast and fast, and I'll be done quick. So it'll be painless.
Okay.
You know, these guys who think they're coming for their guns. You know, some of these right wing people, they're coming for my guns, and people hyping up this all the time.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, would you want to think that the guy who's coming for your gun, he's got one too, obviously. You know,
uh-huh.
You're sitting in your house listening to or whatever you're reading, you know, and so probably you might want to, some way, either on radio or someone, to just say, you know, both of you guys,
mm-hmm.
just call this off. You know, the guy with the gun sitting around, you know, with a shot glass of whiskey in the Book of Revelation open to chapter 13. You know, and the guy, you know, who he thinks is the enemy coming to get his gun, you know, probably both these guys should, you know, probably, you know, rethink their plan.
Uh-huh.
If I could communicate that, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So, and then also, just one of these things about, and just, you know, when you talk about this issue of people suddenly snapping and going off into rampages of unpredictable behavior, you realize that comes from being suggestible, don't you? It comes from it's like I was just, you know, listening to your show, and all of a sudden I got this craving for a chicken sandwich. I'm thinking, chicken sandwich, where did that come from? And I'm thinking, now what does that, you know, some other guy was talking about a chicken sandwich, and he wasn't eating it, he was talking about something completely different, you know. So it's like I'm thinking, well, gee, you know, how's that going to look? I mean, I'm just eating a chicken sandwich.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, it'd be around the, you know, and I've had a lot of experiences like that where people suggest something, you know, you should do this, you should do this. And it's like, what am I, stupid? You know, it's like you're thinking about this whole other thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
You're thinking about this whole other thing.
Other thing,
you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, you can't talk to certain people.
No.
You know, it's like, what am I thinking about? I mean, yeah, you know, don't jerk me around.
I know. Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
All right. Well, you have a good night.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Brian. Good to hear from you. Always is. Thanks, Brian. That was Brian. Way to go, Brian. Brian's calls once in a while. Brian. Do, 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 do. There was something here I wanted to finish up with this evening. Maybe it was this, and maybe not. But this is kind of interesting. You know, I thoroughly loathe the Olympics after watching what happened here in Atlanta. Even before that, before the 96 Olympics. What a farce, what a joke, what another corporate stew pot of graft and corruption and lies and deceit and money, 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 money. From Roz, Roz writes, I didn't know this, Mike. The Olympics really is all about corporate greed and advertising. The actual games is just an afterthought, the way a TV program fills space between commercials. As an example, the Olympics are all about being the best you can be, something the Oak Brook headquartered McDonald's has taken to heart by edging out all other food vendors to become the exclusive French fry distributor at the London Summer Olympics. If you're at the games and want fried potatoes, That means the only kind of fries you'll be getting is McDonald's. There's an exception for fish and chips consumers who can purchase a package deal. But even that wasn't easy. According to The Guardian of the UK, to sell fish and chips, the London Organizing Committee had to get a special dispensation from McDonald's, the official restaurant sponsor, which is expected to provide 10% of meals served at the games. Under its deal with the IOC, the fast food chain had the sole rights to sell chips or French fries. It allows the London Organizing Committee caterers to sell fish and chips, but not chips on their own. This isn't the first time a company has had the exclusive rights to sell a food product at a sporting event, but still, this is the Olympics and McDonald's. Talk about going faster, higher, stronger. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.